Thanks for joining us at Cults to Consciousness. This storytelling podcast is meant to be for entertainment purposes only and does not substitute for any medical advice. We may discuss triggering topics, and we ask that you make your personal mental health a priority. Lastly, the opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the host.
That moment in time, I didn't give two what he was saying to me. I need to manipulate this person's emotions for us to continue this conversation.
Oh.
All I cared about was changing his emotion from being angry or upset to being happy. And that is manipulation.
Hey guys, my name is Shalise Ansola, and this is Cults to Consciousness, where we discuss leaving high demand religions or organizations and finding healing and independence through awareness and true individual sovereignty. If you are listening only and you would prefer to see our faces, go to my YouTube channel at Cults to Consciousness, where you can like and subscribe. Guys, we just hit 10,000 subscribers, and I'm just over the moon, grateful and thankful. And I cannot take all of the credit. I would not be here today if it weren't for all of the amazing, brave, and vulnerable people who have shared their stories and made this possible. So thank you to all of my incredible guests, and thank you to the listeners for tuning in every week. And of course, I could not have done this without my incredibly talented and amazing co-producer, Jonathan, and my soon-to-be husband in 2.5 weeks. Last week's episode with Danny on Scientology was so awesome. If you haven't watched that video already, definitely make sure to watch that one after you finish this one. You guys left so many incredible comments. Thank you so much for taking the time to share a little piece of your life with me. I read all of them. I respond to as many as I can, and I really appreciate you writing your thoughts. So today's episode, we are going to continue on the Scientology train, which I'm really excited for. He reached out. He has his own channel, and he is someone who watched a documentary on Scientology, and it was not very favorable, and he wanted to do a little bit of investigative work, so he went to check it out. Next thing you know, he's signing a billion-year contract for this organization, becomes a staff member, and then is kicked out a couple times, but rejoins and got kicked out again, and then eventually realized, you know what? Something's not right here. So we're going to dive super deep into his story. Thank you so much for joining us, Apostate Alex.
Thank you for having me. And firstly, well done on 10,000 subscribers. That's so awesome. Congratulations.
Yay! Thank you. Yeah, your channel's growing really quickly as well. You started a couple months ago and you're at 3K or past 3K?
So I started almost just over 4 weeks ago. So I'm a month in. And yeah, I'm just about to hit 3,000.
That's crazy. Incredible.
But yeah, no, thank you for having me on. I think for me, I was in Scientology a while ago. I joined in sort of 2010, 2011-ish, and was involved and on staff until I was kicked out in 2014. And then I kind of considered myself a Scientologist still until probably about 2016 or so. And then kind of didn't really think about it too much and kind of went on and did my own thing. And it wasn't until about a year ago that I realized it was still affecting me mentally, and maybe there's a bit more work to be done. You know, don't want to call it deprogramming, but you know, kind of looking at how it still affects you even though you've been out for so long. So started doing that work, and sort of as I started unpicking it all, very quickly realized that there's so much still going on in my mind as a result of it. And I shared my story on Chris Shelton's channel, who is another former staff member who he's an academic and he talks about the psychology of coercive control and groups like that. And so shared my story with him in December, and very quickly got picked up by a couple of other YouTubers and people asking me to start sharing my story and starting a YouTube channel. So yeah, it was a month ago that I started my channel and thought, look, what a great opportunity to not just share my story, but give others a platform to do the same. And even, you know, though I've only been going a month, I still get messages pretty much every single day from current members wanting to leave or former members who have just left. And predominantly, I'm the first UK former Scientologist and certainly the first and highest ranking London staff member to speak out against Scientology on a regular basis in YouTube and that sort of thing. There's been press before with people doing interviews and speaking out from the UK, but someone who's kind of actually putting out a serious quantity of content about, you know, my journey and other people's journeys. I'm, you know, the first person to do that. So the majority of people contacting me are saying it's amazing to hear a UK person telling their story and hearing the kind of UK Europe way of things and how that was done here, and how there are similarities and differences to how it's done in America. But it's kind of really spurred me on to think this is a platform to, you know, not just for my own recovery, but to help other people too.
Yeah. And I'm all for that, clearly. We have similar goals, which is great. And I'm wondering then, what are the main differences, if you could speak on that briefly, between the US Scientologists and the London?
Absolutely. I mean, it's kind of hard to put it into a list because they're kind of minute details in how things are applied, right? So in Scientology, L. Ron Hubbard, who's the founder, he wrote all the policies and the technology, they call it technology. He came up with all of that stuff, and there is a policy that says tech is tech, right? Which means what he wrote is what he meant, and that's the only thing that can be applied, and it can't be altered or changed in any way, shape, or form. And there's a thing in Scientology that's called Keeping Scientology Working, which is a really important policy letter that's in the front of every course or whatever that you ever do. And it says, if you apply Scientology correctly 100% of the time, it will work 100% of the time. The only time Scientology doesn't work is if it's not applied correctly.
Wow.
So it's a big thing to like not change Scientology and be true to what it is and what was written, etc. So in terms of what it is in the US versus what it is in the UK, it's not different in terms of beliefs or practices, but it is different in the way that it's applied.
Okay.
I think the only thing really is that, you know, the majority of press and things you hear about Scientology are very US focused because it is a very US based thing. That's where it came from. And there's a lots of stories of kind of abuse and horrible things that have got human trafficking and all that sort of stuff that goes on in Scientology. And it's all very tabloidy and very US focused. And there are more US Scientologists, there are more people in the US than there are in the UK and worldwide. But part of what I'm doing is trying to help people understand that it is slightly different over here, but it doesn't mean it doesn't have the same effect. It is still the same, you know, techniques and control and all this sort of stuff. And abuses and things like that happen all over the world. It's not just in the US, and anyone is potentially vulnerable to it. So that's what I'm kind of trying to do really, is get people to realize that all of the stories in the US, it is just a fraction of what happens worldwide in Scientology.
Okay. Do you know how big the church is in London compared to out here, like percentage wise, or do you have any numbers?
So there's two stats to look at. The first stat is what they tell you.
Right.
And the second stat is what actual, the real data is. They will tell you that they've got millions of members and they are the fastest growing religion on the planet. And they I don't think they've ever broken it down to say there's this many Scientologists in the UK, but they certainly say millions. Whereas if you look at data, for example, from the most recent UK census, I think it was about 2,000 or 3,000 people in the UK said that they declared they were Scientologists. Worldwide, they say they've got millions of members, but a very generous, conservative estimate of how many Scientologists there actually are would probably put the membership at about 30 to 40,000 worldwide.
Wow.
If you kind of break down how many orgs there are and how many people there are. Aaron Smith Levin, who's another YouTuber, his channel is Growing Up in Scientology. He's got a big spreadsheet where he kind of really broke down how many organizations, churches there are, how many staff members there are roughly in each one, and roughly how many public would be going in and servicing, and kind of really generously saying, okay, well, let's say there's this many in this org, which is probably loads more than there actually are, but it puts it about 35,000 on average. Yeah. And at the height of Scientology in the probably in the 80s or so, or the 90s, there's never been more than about 100,000 Scientologists. And yet they claim that there are millions worldwide.
Right. of course. That sounds all too familiar. When it comes to Mormonism, they claim like 16.6 or 16 plus million members. And we know for a fact there's only about 4 million who are active, which is still a big number. It's a big number, but it's not 16 million. So they do the same thing where they inflate the numbers. They tell you it's the fastest growing church and it's spreading all over the world. And the thing is, they send missionaries out and they do baptize people all over the world, but sometimes they take advantage of people who are in poverty, people who need community, someone who needs a friend, or they baptize kids that don't know what's going on, and then they claim them as members, but these people never actually go to church. They just get baptized, don't really know what they're committing to, and then that's it. And they're baptizing for the dead, and they're counting members who have already passed, and it's just, it's a little silly. So I totally understand the whole inflating numbers thing.
Scientology will include anyone that's ever bought a book, right? If you've bought a Scientology book and that's it, they will count that as you're a Scientologist, yeah.
What?
Dianetics, which is Aaron Hubbard's first book, like the big bestseller thing that kind of launched the whole Scientology thing, it is true, in the 50s, it was a New York Times bestseller, and it continues to sell fairly well now, not as much as it did back then, but, you know, millions of copies of this book have genuinely been sold, and that's provable, and that's factual, but when they try and say how many members we've got, they look at things like that, and they will count even the most surface-level person who's just bought a book and they have their email address, well, they can count that person as a Scientologist.
No. Yeah, that's bad. That's even worse than Mormons. So then what is this documentary that you ran into that was problematic that got you interested in Scientology?
Yeah, so John Sweeney, who's a BBC journalist over here in the UK, did a documentary with a program called Panorama that is kind of quite famous in the Scientology world as being one of the big kind of documentaries exposing Scientology. And he did this documentary, went over to the States, and it was a really good documentary, actually, exposing different stories and abuses that happened in the church. And I watched that as a teenager, and it's not that I didn't believe it, but there was a scene in the documentary that's quite famous. If you just type in John Sweeney Scientology on YouTube, you'll get the video. But Scientology tried to get him to react, and there's this famous viral clip where he was shouting at Tommy Davis, the church spokesperson, saying, "You were not there, you don't understand." And that was because Tommy Davis was trying to get John Sweeney to react and get him to have that reaction on camera so that Scientology could discredit him and say, he's obviously not a fair, he's obviously biased as a journalist, and because he's showing this anger and rage, he obviously is not going to be fair in his reporting of Scientology. And it's not that clip that got me thinking, but it does put it into perspective of what you hear and read in the media isn't 100% factual 100% of the time. And I always want to think critically about things and not just take one side of the story. So when I heard these negative stories of abuse and that sort of thing on BBC Panorama, as an inquisitive teenager, I thought, okay, well, let's not discount that. But I also want to see the other side of the story. What do the church have to say about it? And I didn't want to just go off what I've read online or what I've seen in this documentary. You know, I did research before going in, but I wanted to get a balanced view, both sides of the argument. And so I went in and did a personality test, which is one of the first things most people do in Scientology, where they ask you a bunch of questions and plot on a graph kind of areas of your life that could be improved. And they suggested buying a book and doing a course, which was like £30. So that's like, what, $40 or $50 or something in US currency. And you think at the time, cool, well, why not? You know, it's not that much money. And they answer your questions in such a, I don't know the right word, but such a perfect way that it satisfies your need. So I didn't go in there and kind of just discount everything. I gave them a tough time. I said, you know, I've heard about this disconnection policy, or I've heard that there are abuses happening, or human trafficking, child trafficking, all these sorts of things. I heard that you believe in aliens and this Xenu story.
Yeah.
And they always give you an answer that makes you think, Okay, well, that kind of makes sense. So I'll give you an example with disconnection, right? I would say, look, I hear that Scientology is, you know, broken families apart and caused people to disconnect. And the answer I got was, well, I think you need to understand that there is a policy of disconnection in Scientology. That is something that we do and it's something we practice, but the media have completely misinterpreted and misunderstood it. And the example I was given was, if you had a friend or someone who was bullying you or not being very nice to you and you didn't get on with them, you would naturally think, okay, I'm not going to spend that much time with that person. I'm going to live my life separate to them and not talk to them and kind of avoid them. That's you disconnecting from them. And in Scientology, that's all it is it's just a kind of a formula and a way of doing that. If someone chooses to not spend time with someone who's getting in their way or being harmful or rude or mean, then they can choose to disconnect from them. And I said, okay, cool. That answers my question. That makes sense. And that doesn't sound like the disconnection that was told in the documentary and in the reading that I'd done, which makes it sound really bad. And when you're speaking to someone who has been in Scientology since the 60s or 70s, that is OT8, which is the highest level of Scientology, there's an element of kind of, okay, well, I can probably trust this person a little bit in what they say because they know what Scientology is because they've done it all and they've been there for years. Mm-hmm. And so they just have this way of answering all of your questions to make you feel satisfied. And they think, okay, well, why don't you just do this course? Because there's no strings attached. There's no consequences of not doing it. You can just do the course, you'll read the book, you answer the questions, you try applying some of the technology, some of the techniques, and if it works for you, great. If it doesn't work for you, that's fine. It was only bloody £30, right? Or £40 or whatever. Yeah. So what, you know, at the end of the day, what have you really lost? And you think, okay, well, yeah, that makes sense. Why not? Right. And it went from that to about 6 months later, suddenly signing my staff contract to work for the church because I was seeing people being happy and being helped by Scientology. And I was like, yeah, why not? If I want to help people in my life, Scientology is the best way to help people. It's clearly helping people. So why not get on board with that? And yeah, just to sum it up in a nutshell, was on staff for a few months, got kicked out, rejoined a couple of years later, and then was posted as the director of public book sales at Church Scientology in London. So my job was overseeing all of the sales in London and Malta as well. Strangely, that was one of my territories, and was doing that. And then, yeah, finally got kicked out and declared a potential trouble source in 2014.
Wow. Okay, there's a lot that we can dive into here. I want to...
Sorry.
No, that's okay. I want to start with going back to them answering questions in a way that made sense to you. I really want to dive in, now that you have a different perspective on how they did that and how they satisfied your questions, what are some of the techniques you think that they were using to... Not necessarily intentionally, in an intentionally culty way, but when you look at the BITE model, the behavior control, information control, what are some of the things that you can recognize now were working in their favor to get you to let go of your reasoning? Like, I really want to know what their answer to the Xenu thing was, because I remember walking into a Scientology building here in LA. My sister was in town and she was just like, let's go to a Scientology building. And it's before I really knew better. I was like, okay, sure. We walked in and, you know, they greeted us with their bright, peppy smiles. And do you want to try that? I think they asked, do you want to do a personality test? And we're like, no, we're good. And then he's like, well, what do you know about Scientology? And the first thing we said is, well, we know about Xenu. And he turned completely white and he panicked and he goes, who told you that? And we were like, the internet. Like, he was mortified that we brought it up. So I'm curious what happened when you brought it up, if you had a similar reaction.
Yeah, I think it's hard because it always surprises me when I hear stories like this, that a public-facing Scientology staff member, when asked about Xenu, has a sort of shock reaction, because I've been that person. My job was public-facing. I was giving people tours around the church and selling books, and almost daily I would have people asking me about Xenu and this alien story and so on. So it's nothing new and it's not shocking as a Scientologist to hear that from a public. So it always surprises me that people say they did get this kind of shocked reaction, because they would have heard it before and you wouldn't have been the first person to ever say that. But
right,
with that particular question, and you're talking about the kind of techniques that are used to satisfy your need and answer your questions. I think one thing to just frame this is the majority of Scientologists are genuinely good people, mm-hmm. and they want to help people. And it's unfortunate, but they truly believe in their heart and their soul that the best way and most effective way of helping people is through Scientology. So when you hear about these sort of manipulation tactics and coercive control, it's not because anyone is sitting there thinking, oh great, how can I abuse this person? Or how can I manipulate this person? Or how can I control them and get them in? They genuinely believe that what they're doing is the right thing. And they genuinely think that by getting you into Scientology, they are helping you on a like spiritual eternal level. Mm-hmm. So the coercion and the manipulation that happens, most Scientologists, in fact, I would hesitate to say all of them, don't know that that's what they're doing. They're not aware of it. I certainly wasn't. It wasn't until I started unpacking it that I realized, hold on, what I did there was actually quite manipulative, but I didn't realize it at the time. So going into the sort of zany question, the techniques, you would just go off your own experiences, right? So the person I asked initially the Xenu story was OT8, which is the highest level of Scientology. Without getting too much into the weeds, Scientology has a thing called the Bridge, which has got different levels on it. And it's kind of just a step-by-step route to spiritual freedom. And you do like one course and then you do the next course and they go up in levels and so on. And at OT3, that's where you get the Xenu story, and OT8 is the highest you can get in Scientology. They haven't released, and it's rumored, and I probably believe this, that the levels after OT8, so like OT9, 10 and so on, don't exist because L. Ron Hubbard didn't write them before he died. Mm. So you can't go past OT8. Anyway, person I spoke to was OT8. So this is someone who has been in Scientology since the 60s or 70s. By the way, getting to OT8 costs no less than about $500,000. So this person is fully in, fully indoctrinated, fully believes it. And she has a really good, thorough understanding on what Scientology is because she's done it all. She knows it. So when I ask her, do you, you know, what's this Xenu story? Do you believe in aliens? I remember actually saying as a teenager, I'm not judging you because actually I think that's quite cool if you believe in aliens. I can get on board with that. Yeah. Like, cool, right? Aliens. Yeah, I can jump on that ship and believe in aliens. And she just said, no, it's absolutely not the case. And the thing, the where that came from is L. Ron Hubbard was a science fiction writer before he started Scientology. And the answer that I got, which is the same answer I would give when I was asked that question on staff, is that L. Ron Hubbard used the money from his science fiction writing to fund his research into the mind and then start the Scientology thing. And people wrongly believe that we as Scientologists believe in his science fiction writing and take that as fact, which is not the case. We recognize it's science fiction. He did that to make some money. And the spiritual stuff, Dianetic Scientology, is completely separate. But people think that we believe in the science fiction. So he wrote stories about aliens, yes, but that's not a spiritual thing. It's not Scientology. And you go, okay, cool. And this person is like, well, I've done that OT3 level because I'm OT8, so I would know, right? And you go, okay, great, cool, fair enough. That all makes complete sense in my mind. But then when you look at it once you're out and you realize that when you get to the OT3 level, you are so indoctrinated that you believe that if you hear this story of Xenu and aliens and stuff before you are ready, before you've done the steps before, if you receive this information, you will get pneumonia and die within a matter of days. So if you've done that level, you don't want to tell anybody or confirm anybody like asking, you don't want to confirm that story to anybody asking that question, because you fully believe that if they find out or they know about it, that you're going to kill them with pneumonia. So of course, anyone that asks you straight up, is that what OT3 is? You're going to say, no, absolutely not. That's not what we believe. Because if you said yes, you're going to kill them inadvertently with pneumonia.
Whoa.
Because that's how far in you have to be at that point.
So you, it's like a righteous lie. Like you're doing it to save them. And there's something similar to that in Mormonism with the temple work and the ceremonies, where when you, once you finally make it to the temple, it, there's really not like, you don't have to pay a certain amount. You do have to pay 10% of your income in order to get a temple recommend to go into the temple. Are you familiar with Mormonism at all?
Yes, I haven't delved into it as much as obviously I have with Scientology, but yes,
okay.
I'm aware
okay.
of the kind of temple and the praying for like dead people and stuff, right?
Yes. So you go, and when you're young, you can do baptisms for the dead. So I did that from like, I don't know, 11 or 8 to teenage years. And then once you get married, you're supposed to get married in the temple, which means you get your endowments taken out, which is basically just like a promise to God. And then you're supposed to go back weekly to do that for dead people. So there's a lot of super secret temple rituals like handshakes and stuff and chants that you do, but you're not allowed to talk about it outside the temple. So even if your husband wanted to talk to you about it, you're not really supposed to. I mean, I'm sure couples do, but you're not supposed to say a word about it once you leave the temple. And so it keeps people in this weird box where they're like, I really want to know, like, I want to tell somebody the weird stuff that just happened, but I can't because then I'm violating my commitment to God. And then if someone asks you about it, it's the same thing. It's like, oh, it's sacred. We don't talk about it. So one of the taglines that everyone kind of laughs at is, it's not secret, it's sacred. And we're like, I don't know about that, because pretending to slit your throat and cut out your bowels, which is something that they don't do anymore because people were obviously not okay with it, doesn't seem like something that's very sacred to me. It just sounds a little culty. So I totally understand the whole, like, you have to make it up to the highest ranks in order to be privy to all of the secrets and the rituals and, you know, all the stuff that you can't know until you're at that level.
And it's a similar technique that's used in Scientology, because it's heavily, heavily discouraged that you can't talk to other members about your opinions or thoughts, because in Scientology, the belief is that if you don't agree with something that L. Ron Hubbard has written, again, there's two policies that completely contrast this. The policy they'll tell you about when you first join is what's true for you is true, which basically means if you read something that L. Ron Hubbard has written and you don't agree with it, or you try and apply it and it doesn't work, that's totally fine. You're in control. And the good thing about Scientology is you can just apply the bits that you want to and the bits that make sense and that work. And that's the beauty of it. There's no element of faith. It's like techniques and tools you can use in your life. And if they don't work, that's fine.
Yeah. And that makes sense. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, of course. But when you get more fully indoctrinated and you're further down the line, there's the teaching that if you don't agree with something that's in the policy or in the tech or whatever, it's because you've gone past a word you don't understand, or you fully don't understand the concept of what is being said or written in the policy. So if you don't agree with it, that's because you've done something wrong. You've not read it right. You've not understood it right. So go back, read it again, and, you know, read it again and again and again until you realize that that is correct and you believe in it. And it's that similar sort of cognitive dissonance. You know, you can't talk to your family members or your friends about it, because there's a real snitch culture in Scientology, which is that there's lots of reports written about everything. And it comes from, in Scientology, the idea is that if you see something happening that shouldn't happen, you would write what's called a knowledge report, which goes to the ethics department of the church. You know, I saw, you know, John over there kissing another woman and he's married. So you'd write a report on John and hand it in, and then ethics would go and handle it and try and sort out a situation. And there's an element of fear, because if you don't do that and it is later found out that you were there to see it, then you get in trouble to the same level as the person who committed the crime or whatever. So you have to write the reports, because if you don't and get found out, you're in trouble. So you write these reports about everything. And because your faith in Scientology is so strong at this point, even if you're married to someone, there are so many stories of this. You're married to a fellow Scientologist and you get home and you're having your dinner and you think, oh, I read this thing earlier that doesn't quite make sense. Or I did OT3 today and they talk about space opera and aliens and volcanoes. And isn't that a bit wacky? Like, what on earth are we involved in? Your husband or wife will write a report on you to ethics.
Oh.
And they will then bring you in, because that's, you know, what you have to do, because Scientology are the ones with the ethics and the tech and they can solve every problem. So instead of, you know, talking about it, you report it to ethics because they can sort it out. So that happens in your mind. And it's, you know, like I said, it's that cognitive dissonance of you can't talk to anyone else about it because any critical thought will be reported on and you'll get hauled in to do some sort of program to fix your opinion. So you keep it all very much to yourself. So when people talk about Scientology and brainwashing, I don't know if I necessarily agree with that term, but it's all done by yourself. You are the person reading the stuff. You're applying it. There's no element of faith, like in Christian religions, for example, or churches. You read the Bible and you either believe in it or you don't. You have faith. Right? Whereas in Scientology, there's no element of that. You read it and you apply it and it either works or it doesn't work. And that's it. There's no one preaching to you to say, this is the gospel. This is what, do you believe it? Do you not believe it? It's just, this is what it is. Take it or leave it. But once you're in the point I was in of being a staff member, if you decide to leave it because it doesn't make sense or you don't agree with it, well, then you're in trouble because you've not read it correctly or you've not understood it correctly, because it works 100% of the time.
Right. So then talk us through your thought process, because you go in completely skeptical. They answer your questions in a way that makes sense to you. And then you're completely involved in go in head first. Yes, I will sign this contract. I will work for you. And then you get to the point that you're kicked out. So where is that switch happening? Because you switch in the beginning and then somewhere in the middle, you feel like something is off, right? And is that when you get kicked out?
I wasn't kicked out because I wanted to leave. I was kicked out because a very distant connection, like a friend of a friend's cousin had a family member's colleague or something, was an anti-Scientologist, a suppressive person. They call them SPs in Scientology. And it was found out that I had this loose connection to this person. And because of that, they kicked me out and said, you're too much of a risk. You know, you can't come into the church, etc. So I didn't want to leave. I got kicked out.
Wow.
And then months later, when I went back in, I said, this is insane. I never even met this person. I don't know their name. I just know that there's a connection. And they looked into it and did a board review and said, yeah, we're sorry. We shouldn't have kicked you out. It was incorrect for us to do that because you're not connected to someone, etc. Here, you can come back in. And then we'll get into this reason I got kicked out the second time later. But the journey from going in and doing the course and having all of your questions answered and thinking, cool, well, I'll do this course, I'll apply it and see if it works, and that's great. And then everyone in London Org particularly are very young, very cool, they're very nice people. Everyone's on a united mission to clear the planet, which is kind of Scientology lingo for saving everybody, basically. And so when you've got this nice young community of people around the same age as you trying to achieve this like grand goal of helping everyone, everyone's really nice and friendly. And you kind of think, cool, these guys are trying to do something here and make a difference. And for me, the button, they call it button, is like the thing that kind of, you know, is going to get you your ruin. For me, it was helping people. You know, I wanted to help people. I've got a fairly sensible head on my shoulders and kind of have a good understanding of life in general and kind of the way things work. And they saw that and got me as a teenager and said, well, look, you've done a couple of courses and it's helped you, right? And you go, yes. You go, well, if you really want to help people, this is the best way of helping people. It's helped you and you can see all of the other people around you that it's helped. This is the best way to help the most amount of people. So why wouldn't you sign up? It's only 2.5 years. It's not the lifetime commitment. And you come and work. And if it doesn't work out, you don't enjoy it, well, it's 2.5 years of your life. You know, you've got many years of your life to live, and also you're an immortal spiritual being, so you have multiple lifetimes. So if you waste 2.5 years doing something you don't like or don't enjoy, so what? It's nothing, right? And you think, okay, yeah, well, why not? That makes sense. Fine. So you sign your seal, not your seal contract, you sign your staff contract, and you join staff, and then suddenly you're working for them Monday to Friday, 9 to 6. And you're then suddenly in an environment where you're around these people all day, every day, for hours upon hours. So the indoctrination, although you're not aware of it, happens a lot more intensely. Mm-hmm. And that's how you get from being someone who is just kind of interested, that's been helped a little bit by some of the techniques, and wanting to do a bit more and help people, to, you know, a year or so or two later, signing my life away to become a Sea Org member, which is like a monk or a nun of Scientology. You're dedicating your life to it. And it's because you're in that scenario, surrounded by people applying it and kind of indoctrinating you really intensely.
Yeah. How was it working for them? So with the 2.5 years, it sounds like a 2-year mission for Mormons, where you actually pay them to go and spread the word for 2 years. Do they pay you a livable wage? Are you doing this voluntarily? How does that work?
Yeah. So the contract is for either 2.5 or 5 years. And it's a religious volunteer contract. So they get around the whole minimum wage thing. In the UK, there's a minimum wage. In order to do any sort of work, you have to be paid at least, I think it's like £9 or £10 an hour or something. But as a religious volunteer, they get around that clause. So you don't have to be paid anything. Oh. You work Monday to Friday, 9 to 6. Or there's a foundation org, which is the same building, but just the evenings and weekends staff. There's two sets of staff. So you sign up for 2.5 years or 5 years to work full time for this organization. And, you know, you have your own life, you live where you live and you commute in. Most people have jobs outside of the church that they do when they're not working in the church, because they have to fund themselves.
Yeah.
And in return, you get training and processing for free. You don't have to pay for anything that you do. And you do get some money, but it's dependent on how much the church makes each week. So most of the time I was on staff, I got between £20 and £50 a week. When you're doing a full-time Monday to Friday 9 to 6 job, that's not, you know, that's barely nothing. But you don't sign a contract because you want money. You sign it because you want to help and make a difference. Yeah. So you'll figure out money. You'll make that elsewhere. You'll make it work because this is important. You're doing something really important here of helping the world.
Yeah.
So you do get a bit of money, but the idea is you get processing and training for free. And the clause is, if you leave your contract early, if you break your contract, then you get a bill for all of the processing and training that you got for free, and you have to pay that off before you can continue any further training or processing. So the Sea Org is slightly different, which is a similar setup, but you get £50 a week. And this is for people who have signed a 1-billion-year contract, which is your whole life and all future lives, to work full time 7 days a week, 9 in the morning till 10 at night. You're basically a monk or a nun of Scientology. And again, you get this kind of return, you get this processing and training and stuff in return for free. But because it's a lifetime commitment, if you ever decide to leave, you will get a freeloader bill of all of the training and processing you've ever received, and you have to pay it back, otherwise you can't do any more Scientology. And these bills often run into the hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Wow. Okay, I don't want to spoil the ending, but I do want to find out if you got this bill when we get to that point. I'm wondering what your emotional state was during those 2 years when you're spending all of your time and you're not really getting any money for it, which I know you said it was out of the kindness of your heart and you wanted to help people genuinely. But after a while, that's got to wear on you. What were you thinking during that time? Were you enjoying it the whole time? Were you wanting to leave?
Absolutely. You genuinely think that what you're doing is the most noble and caring and helpful thing any human can do in their life. And So therefore, any amount of misery or suffering or pain is so worth it, because so what if you're miserable this lifetime for a couple of days or however long? Even if you're suffering your whole life, it's nothing, because you're an immortal spiritual being that has millions of lifetimes previous and millions of lifetimes to go. So what if you have a lifetime of, you know, not having loads of money and living a luxurious life, because, you know, this is just one lifetime. So even when you're not enjoying it and you're thinking, God, you know, I remember having to make a decision based on the amount of money I had. Do I get a bus ride home or get dinner, right? Because I didn't have any money. And you think, well, I can walk, it's only an hour, it's not a very long walk or whatever, but fine. But whichever decision you go down, you think either way, it doesn't matter, because yeah, it sucks, but I'm doing it because it's the greatest good for the greatest number of dynamics, right? My short-term suffering of either not eating or having to walk a really long way, it's worth it, because ultimately you're helping humankind.
That's incredible of you. I mean, it speaks to how big your heart is and how much you did want to help change the world. So let's get to the point where they kick you out for a second time. Are you willing to talk about that?
Yeah, of course. So after rejoining, they did this board of review where they said, you know, we're sorry we shouldn't have kicked you out. I was pretty upset, because when you get kicked out of Scientology, it's not just like you can leave and, you know, still talk to your friends and whatever. There are people who, you know, do Scientology, then stop doing Scientology and leave. Like, most people don't experience this. It's only if you're on staff or as a Sea Org member that you experience these sorts of stories. But you get kicked out and then you're told that you can't speak to your friends or anyone in the church. They're not allowed to speak to you because you're a potential trouble source. You are someone that is connected to someone that's anti-Scientology. So no one wants anything to do with you at all, because they don't want any influence at all in that kind of regard. So when I finally got back in the second time, I was kind of a bit upset, and I said, I'm a bit upset here because I was on this mission. I thought I was doing the right thing, helping people. I got kicked out, which sucked. But what sucked even more is, as a teenager, I would have been about 16 at this time, making all these friends, spending all day every day with them, going out selling books and having a great time and helping people. Suddenly they won't even reply to my texts, and I'm branded some sort of horrible person because I'm connected to someone that I am not even connected to. I'm upset about that, right?
I did not realize, and maybe you said it earlier and I apologize if I missed this, I did not realize that you were working as a teenager.
Yeah.
You were 16 when you signed the 2-year contract?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Okay. Well, that completely that changes the perspective on everything. I thought you were like an adult out in the world already having a job. So wait, what did your parents think about this? Because were you able to even, you couldn't go to school then, right?
Yeah. So in the UK, it's slightly different. It's the same as the US now, but when I was in school, you would finish school at 16 and then you have an optional 2 years of sixth form or college before going to university.
Oh.
But you don't have to do it, it's optional. So most people finish school at 16. So I finished school, and as soon as I finished school in that summer holiday before going to do my 2 years of sixth form, that's when I joined staff. And I was trying to work it out that my parents are not Scientologists. I wasn't raised in it. So my parents didn't have to be Scientologists, but they had to be okay with me doing it, because I wanted to not go to sixth form and continue my education, and I wanted to be on staff. So there was this whole process of trying to handle my parents to get them to be okay with me doing this thing. Yeah, like it was a thing that they were kind of okay with, kind of not, but they kind of accepted it, and you can do what you want to do in your life, it's fine. So yeah, I was 16 when I got kicked out.
Wow.
And yeah, that kind of tore me up a little bit on the inside.
Yeah. Impressionable years, you're wanting to fit in, you find something that you feel like this is your world now, and everything revolves around Scientology, and you're happy and you're on a mission to save the world. I mean, you're basically becoming a real world superhero as a 16-year-old. and then they just kick you out. Of course it's going to tear you up. And I'm sorry I interrupted your story. You were talking about how all of a sudden your friends were ignoring you and that was really painful for you.
Yeah, of course. So the reason I bring that up is because it's really relevant to the reason I got kicked out the second time. Because when I went in, I said, I'm really upset about this thing happening to me and I think it's not fair. They gave me some auditing and there was a program to try and help me recover and make me feel okay with it and understand it and kind of say, well, you know, you go into a session of auditing, which is kind of like they call it spiritual counseling, which is the main process of Scientology. Let's do this and we'll handle it and get you so that you're not upset about it anymore. And I went into this session and it made me feel more upset. It brought things up and I wasn't happy and I was crying and I was upset. It's like a therapy session. Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad. But in Scientology, there's a principle that you're not allowed to leave the room of an auditing session until you are what's called VGIs, very good intentions. You're happy, you're smiling, you're feeling okay again. So if you're in an auditing session and you're feeling upset and angry or whatever, the auditor has to get you to the point of being happy again before you can leave the room. So when I left the auditing session, I was upset. I was kind of saying, look, Scientology isn't working for me here because I was upset about something that happened to me. And you said that going into session as an auditing session will help me make me feel better and resolve the situation. And actually, it's made me feel worse. I didn't cry about this before. And now I'm sat here in tears because I'm upset. And it's effectively what happened was they took my words and twisted them slightly. And I was put into a room with an ethics officer. And he said, right, you need to do an OW write-up, which is overts and withholds, which I think Danny explained pretty concisely in your last interview with her. But it's essentially your transgressions and it's a confessional. Write up all the things you've done wrong against the church. At this time, I would have been 18 or 19, so still young, but, you know, an adult and a bit older than I was before. And I was saying, well, I haven't done anything. I can't think of anything that I've done wrong against the church. You have to do it. You have to write down. You've got to think of something. Very, very forceful. Ended up crying in that room saying, I'm upset because something happened to me. I've not done anything wrong. Can you at least give me some time to walk away, think about it, and maybe I can come up with something that I have done wrong that I can't think of right now? No, you can't leave the room until you've done this OW write-up. You have to complete it. Got up to leave. The guy puts his hand on the door handle. I physically was not allowed to leave that room until I'd written up my transgressions. Upset, crying, all of the stuff you'd expect. Eventually come up with something that, you know, will satisfy them. You write it down. You go, oh, okay, fine. They go, you know, there's something. And you're allowed to leave.
Did you just have to make something up?
Yeah, the thing I came up with, so there's a cafe in the Church of Scientology that's like, it's an honor system because there's not enough staff to actually staff the cafe. So, you know, you take a can of Coke out of the fridge and you would just put the money in the tray. And I said, and this is true, sometimes I wouldn't really look at the change I've got in my pocket. If I take a can of Coke, I'll just put all of the change I've got in the tray. Mm. And most of the time, I'm probably paying more than what it's worth. But occasionally, I'm sure there would have been times when I paid slightly less than what it's worth. But I just put all my change in there. And ultimately, the church has probably benefited because I've ultimately given you more money than I would have otherwise. But that was twisted into, well, you've been stealing from the church because those times you didn't pay enough, you've then stolen the church property. So that's what I'd done wrong. And there's no consequences. It's not like you tell them you've done this and they go, right, you're in trouble. The whole act of telling them and writing it down is meant to be the transformative, you know, great, you've got it off your chest now, you can move on. So that's what I came up with. But this is the mindset that someone is in this situation. I left the room. When I left the room, finally, I thanked the guy. I said, thank you for locking me in that room. Because if you hadn't have done that, I would have left. And if I'd have left, I wouldn't have done my OW write-up. And therefore, I wouldn't have applied Scientology. I wouldn't have done the right thing. And I wouldn't have, you know, got to the stage where I'm at now, where I've done the OW write-up and we can move on. So thank you for locking me in because you've ensured I've done the right thing in applying this technology. Absolutely fine. Not traumatic in the slightest. You know, that's just something that happened and that was the right thing to do for me. Years later, when you look back on it, when you're out, you realize, well, applying Scientology technology isn't the right thing to do if it means locking someone in a room and making them cry and they can't leave till they've done it. So that I'm just telling that story because I want people to understand the mindset of what you're thinking when you're in that situation. You're not sat there thinking, God, I want to get out of here. These people are abusing me. I'm a victim. You're thinking, yeah, you're upset. But at the end of it, you're thinking, thank you, because you've made me do the right thing here.
Wow. Yeah, it sounds just like the bishop confessionals that we have in Mormonism, where you have to go, I think you have to go yearly once you hit 12 or something. So I would go in like as a young girl, and I say girl because it wasn't a woman, not a young woman. I was a child, and they would ask sexually explicit questions as part of the interview. And it's not to say that it was only about sex, but there are certainly things in there. Are you living the law of chastity? And even as a kid, it's like, what? I don't even know what that means. But then eventually you start to feel guilty about masturbation or even just kissing somebody, and you feel the need to confess these sins to this random dude with no training whatsoever. And that was eventually what got me to leave the church, because once I was older, 19 or 20, I just felt like the worst person in the world, and he's shaming me and guilting me, and this is unnatural, and you shouldn't be with your boyfriend. I think you should break up because you're a bad influence on him. I'm like, what? Just like crazy stuff, to where, same as you, I left that room bawling. I sit in the car and I go, wow, he's right. He's right. I need to do better. I need to pray more. I need to read my scriptures more. And that is not true. That is not true at all. I was just verbally assaulted by this man, and I'm the one who thinks that I need to change. It's not okay. It's victim blaming. We know now that there's so much wrong with that psychologically. And there's nothing that we can do in the moment because we've been taught that that's how it works and you have to submit to the system.
In Scientology, it's almost identical. There are hundreds of stories out there of children as young as 6 or 8 in auditing sessions with, you know, men who are over the age of 50, like a small child girl that's 6 or 7 years old in a room with an auditor that's a 50-year-old man asking about your sexual intentions and that sort of thing. It's a very commonplace thing that happens. But in Scientology, there's this core belief. It's quite empowering at the start because the belief is that you are this immortal spiritual being that's going to live forever, and you therefore have more power and ability and control than anyone could ever imagine. So you are completely in control of your own environment. And so if you're in a situation where you're unhappy or you don't like something, you're the one with the power to remove yourself from that situation. You're in control of your environment. It's a very empowering thing at the beginning. But on the flip side of that, when there are, you know, there are stories of people being abused sexually by staff members, you know, this idea of a 6-year-old girl going into an auditing session with a 50-year-old man who then asks about her masturbation or something. Or say, for example, the auditor was abusing her in some way. The girl who is the victim must have done something to pull that in, because she's ultimately in control of her environment. So what have you done to put yourself in that situation? Why have you allowed this to happen? Because if you're a spiritual being with more power and control and ability than you can ever imagine, you wouldn't put yourself in that situation if you didn't want to. So what did you do wrong? Why did you put yourself in a situation where you allowed yourself to be abused or victimized or whatever? That's the mindset. That's what you're thinking. You're thinking, yeah, I'm in control here, and so therefore I must have done something wrong. It's exactly the same as your story in Mormonism.
It's awful. It's so awful. And I think the worst part about it is they don't realize how awful it is, because they don't have any right in there. Danny mentioned that therapy is a no-no, like they don't believe in therapy. So they don't even have people who are qualified to analyze what they're doing and see if it's okay psychologically to put someone through that. And it's not okay. It's just not okay. Why are these religions, especially Scientology being such a new religion, why are they not up with the times and the science and what we know to be true about human beings? It makes no sense to me.
It's because the policy is what L. Ron Hubbard wrote is gospel almost, yeah. Right? And what he says is 100% true 100% of the time.
Yeah.
So when something comes up that doesn't make sense or isn't quite correct, well, that's because you've not applied the policy correctly, or that's because you've not done the right thing. Going back to that Xenu story that we were talking about earlier, I didn't reach OT3. I didn't ever read those documents where it says about Xenu and galactic warlords and all of that. And so when people came up and asked me about it and said, do you believe in aliens? I would say, no, we don't. And I give the science fiction story I gave earlier, but I would always say, I'm a staff member in Scientology. I would know, right? Yeah. Even though I've not reached that level, I've been in this full time. I work for the church. I've dedicated my life to it. I would know if that was a thing. And also, I'm not opposed to it. That's pretty cool. If I was a member of a religion that believed in aliens and stuff, like, cool, man, I would totally be up for that. But no, unfortunately, it's not true.
I just have to say, like, I'm laughing, not at you. I'm laughing because that is exactly word for word what I said as a Mormon.
No way.
When people would ask me, yes, all of the ridiculous questions when they would say, don't you know that Joseph Smith put a rock in a hat to translate the Book of Mormon? I'm like, guys, you have to stop with the rock in the hat thing. It's not true. I would know. I'm Mormon. I was born and raised in it. And then I find out later that it is true, and the church now has come out, like, literally showing the prophet was like, so this is how it worked, and he puts his head in a hat. And I'm just like, what? Because before that, we were just straight up lied to. And even like the higher ups probably didn't know it was true. Probably the top did. But, you know, you're just shielded from that information, and not only shielded, but directly lied to, so that when people ask you, you give them the same answer. And it's like, oh, guys, and it's so annoying. And you're like, believe me, why don't you trust me instead of some random internet source that's probably just propaganda? But you don't realize that it's actually the truth, which is the hardest part to swallow when you get out and you realize, oh wow, all of that stuff, all of those negative things people were coming to me with were actually true, and I have to deal with that.
And even if you do know it's true at the time, you believe you're doing the right thing by denying those rumors.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, in Scientology, there's the belief that life is split up into 8 dynamics, right? The first dynamic is self. The second dynamic is like relationships, family. Then there's groups. And so it's all split up in these 8 kind of ways. And what you want to do is do whatever action you take is always for the greatest good, for the greatest number of dynamics. So if you're in Scientology, which is obviously the best way to help humankind, if you have to tell a white lie about Xenu, that's okay, because even though that's not a nice thing to do, is lie to someone, ultimately you're saving that person from getting pneumonia and dying. And there's also the kind of where I was at, because I didn't do the OT3 level. In my mind, I kind of heard the stories before and I thought, well, maybe it is true, maybe it isn't. But when I do get to that level, when I do hear the story, I will be ready for it. If it is or isn't true, doesn't matter, because even though it sounds absurd and wacky now, when I get to the point where I read it, I will understand it and it will make sense and I'll get it. So there's this kind of cognitive dissonance in your mind where you're telling yourself that even though this doesn't sound quite right, and it sounds like something here is not 100% right in the way it's done, and it sounds a bit dodgy, and there's manipulation that goes on, and stories of families being disconnected. In your mind, you just think, well, there must be more to the story I don't understand. Yeah. And I will understand it when I'm ready. There's this family that's been disconnected, and they're broken apart, and they're really upset. Well, there must be a reason that that's been allowed to happen and it's not being told, because Scientology is the best thing for everyone. So Scientology wouldn't do that. So there's obviously something I'm missing or I'm not understanding. So you're telling yourself these lies all the time because you're fully convinced and you're trying to convince yourself that you're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
So that's where your head is at. And that's why you get to the point that I did of signing my Sea Org contract, which is, you know, a 1 billion year lifetime commitment. You're not just committing this life, but all future lives to helping this organization. That's where your head is at. You are fully in belief that this thing is helping humankind. And this is the best and most important thing you can ever choose to do in your life. So when you're that indoctrinated, you will do anything for this organization because you fully believe in it.
Right. You fully believe in it and you've already put so much time and effort into it that just walking away seems crazy because you've already invested so much.
And you can't walk away, right? If you're a public Scientologist, you're a paying member, just a normal parishioner, yes, you can walk away. There's no problem. They will hound you and call you all the time to try and get you to buy more courses and come back, but they're not going to come stalking you unless you speak out publicly against the church, which is a whole different ballgame. But if you're a staff member or a Sea Org member, you can't walk away because you're in a contract. Legally binding or not doesn't matter. It's a spiritual belief in your head, a spiritual commitment. And you are scared that if you were to break that contract, they will say, no problem, or here's a bill for $200,000 for all of the training that we've given you.
And that's what I wanted to wrap around to. So you like, you perfectly led us into that, which I wanted to know, is that the loophole is getting kicked out, or do they still give you a bill if you get kicked out? And then get back to your story on how that actually happened for you.
Yeah, so there's no loophole. Whether you get kicked out or you leave, you've broken your contract. So here's the bill. I got kicked out because I was saying I was upset that this session, this auditing session, wasn't helping me. I said, I want Scientology to work for me. And right now I'm more upset than I was an hour ago. And so I think something's been misapplied. It's not been done correctly. That was taken as me saying Scientology doesn't work. I was declared a potential trouble source, which is one stop short of an SP, which is a suppressive person that speaks out publicly against Scientology. I would now probably be declared or considered as an SP. But at the time, I was PTS, potential trouble source. And my declare says that I am using a planned campaign to try and get auditing for free. I've blamed Scientology for all of my problems. And actually, the truth of the matter is that I had problems way before I even joined Scientology. And that's the cause of all of my upsets. And you effectively have done something wrong against the church. So when you get declared a PTS, they tell you, well, you can't be on staff because you're a potential trouble source. So in this instance of being locked in the room and doing my OW write-up, I finally did it and gave it to him. And he looked at it, glanced at it for a second, put it down, and then handed me a piece of paper which had been sat there the whole time in his file. That was my declare and staff dismissal. I was walked to my office and told to get my stuff and he was waiting there at the door while I gathered my belongings. I was escorted to the door and told I can't come back until I do a return program of doing certain courses from home and pay my freeloader debt. And then they'll consider letting me back in. But until you've done that, you're not allowed to have any processing or servicing by anyone. You're not allowed in the org, etc. I was someone who was fully committed. I'd signed my Sea Org contract. So this was the most heartbreaking, earth-shattering thing to have ever happened to me. And so it was horrible. And it took me a very long time to process it, which is why I still consider myself a Scientologist until 2016 or so. Because you're still believing that Scientology is the right thing and you've just had a bad experience because something's not been done right. And then over time you realize, no, it's not that you're just unlucky and had a bad case. It's that this is what Scientology is. This is how it operates and this is what it does to people. And it does more harm than good. And once you realize that in your mind, you can start unpicking it. And that's how I've ended up where I am now, talking about my story to help other people realize that you don't have to be stupid to fall for a cult. Anyone can fall for a cult. Anyone can be sucked in. I went in with the hardest, toughest questions for these people, and they still manage with their manipulative techniques to get me to a place of agreeing with them and believing what they had to say. And, you know, I don't want to big myself up, but I'm not stupid, right? I have a decent head of knowledge and a brain on me. Like, anyone can fall for it. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing, is to kind of help people understand how it actually works in your mind, how you go from being critical about Scientology to signing your life away to it in a space of 3 years.
Yeah. I think the through line through all of the people that I talk to, no matter the cult or high demand group, is they take away your intuition and they take away your reasoning, and all the red flags just go out the door. So you just forget how to think critically. And it's not that you don't want to, and you clearly think that you are thinking critically. But what happens is, when they change definitions of words, when they give you new definitions of words, when they paint things in a way that seem okay, like you were mentioning earlier, all of a sudden it builds this trust. And once you've fully given over that trust, they can say, go walk off a cliff, and you'd be like, okay, that's what they want. And it's hard for people who haven't been through this to understand it, but it is so easy to get to that place, especially when everyone around you is doing the same thing. When you have parents who are in it, or friends or colleagues, and they're all smart people, you look at them and you're like, well, they get it. Like, why shouldn't I get it? Like, if I don't believe it, there's something wrong with me, because they're smart and they are clearly on the right path and they seem great. So it's so easy, as you mentioned, just to slip into that cognitive dissonance and just ignore all the red flags. And I want to talk about, now that you've left and you've had some space, how are you doing now? Like, what are the things you mentioned that are still affecting you? Because I think some people watching are probably in similar shoes, and or have left a high demand cult, or are wanting to leave and are thinking, no, I'm fine. I don't need to unpack anything, not realizing later, like we have, I left like 12 years ago. There's still things that come up that I'm like, oh yeah, that's because I used to be Mormon. So what are some things for you that you're still dealing with and unpacking?
Yeah, I think one thing that isn't paid enough attention to in the media and such is that the damage Scientology does is not what most people think. There are these stories of abuse and assault and all these sorts of things, which 100% happen, and I'm not denying them or discrediting them or anything whatsoever. They 100% happen. But the majority of Scientologists won't have that experience. There are, say, there's 35,000 Scientologists in the world, for example. You know, a small number of those have spoken out and are suing the church and so on. But the abuse that happens to every single Scientologist is in the mind in a way that you're not aware of at the time. And it takes a long time before you realize the effect that it's having on you. So, for example, in my case, the example that I've given when I've told my story to other people is that it was about a year ago. So I would have been out of Scientology officially for like 6 years. I didn't believe in Scientology. I'd kind of moved on. I didn't really give it any second thought. I was kind of doing my own thing. And that was just something that happened in the past. I'm not applying Scientology techniques. I'm like doing whatever. I was having a conversation with a friend who is upset for some reason, or angry or whatever. And in that moment, it suddenly hit me like a ton of bricks that I was doing something that you do in Scientology. In Scientology, there's a thing called the tone scale, which is a chart of human emotion. And the idea is that every human, it's a scientific fact that if you're happy and then you're sad, you don't just go from that to that. There's a process of step to step. You'll go from happy to being angry to antagonistic to then sadness. And because it's on a scale, you move up and down the scale. And so when you're confronted with a situation where someone's angry or upset or whatever, my mind went to the place of not listening to what the person is saying to me to try and figure out how to solve the issue. My mind went to a place of, right, this person's upset or angry. I need to get him to a place where he's not angry anymore so that we can then analytically talk about it and solve the problem. But we're not going to solve the problem when he's angry, because he's not thinking rationally. So my mind went to a place of, right, now my goal is to change how he's feeling before we then talk about whatever we need to talk about. And that is manipulation. Like, that is the definition of I need to manipulate this person's emotions for us to continue this conversation. And it hit me that I realized I was still doing that. I was still applying it. I wasn't thinking in my head, oh, this person's angry, I need to change his emotion. I was just doing it and suddenly realized that, can I swear on this channel? Is it right to swear? Yeah. I, at that moment in time, I didn't give two shits what he was saying to me. All I cared about was changing his emotion from being angry or upset to being happy. And then we could talk about it. Couldn't care less what he was saying. Just needed to change his emotion. Mm. When I realized I was doing that, I was thinking, fuck, Scientology is still affecting me, because that's what Scientology teaches you to do. Another telltale sign was I went to therapy about the same sort of time for something completely different and unrelated. And the therapist was saying, in order for us to help, you know, in order for me to help you, you need to feel the emotion in the room. When you're talking about this thing that happened in the past, you need, you know, in order to work on the emotion, you need to feel it. And I just couldn't do it. And we talked a bit about Scientology, and I finally realized that in Scientology, the suppression of emotion is so intense. It's not that I would recognize I had a feeling of anger, let's say, and I was squashing it down and not confronting it. I didn't even recognize that that was an emotion that I could possibly have, right? So I couldn't go through that emotional journey with my counselor because I wasn't even recognizing that I had an emotion there, because it's so ingrained in my brain to squash that down. And once that, coupled with the tone scale emotion conversation I was just telling you about, that made me realize I need to do a bit more work on this. Even though I've been out for 6 years, it's still affecting me. And then I started seeing a cult specialist who knows a lot about Scientology and is a therapist, and also someone that's really educated in coercive control groups and things. And they just really helped me unpick everything in my own mind and get me to look at things in a new way, to realize, you know, what has happened and how I'm thinking and why I'm thinking that, and start to be okay with feeling an emotion again. I remember I was at a gig, like a concert, maybe about 6 months ago, maybe a year ago, about that. And I remember I was listening to a song and it made me cry, right? Because I was emotional and, you know, it was a great song and, you know, everyone has that, you know, understands what I'm talking about. And I was crying. And then I started laughing because I was like, I'm feeling an emotion. Aww. Oh my God. Like, this is amazing. Even though I'm crying at the sad song, I recognize I can feel an emotion. And it was this really weird mix of being sad at this song, but also happy that I'm feeling an emotion finally. And it's just from now, your question was how I'm doing now. It's just that journey of unpacking that and step by step, realizing things every day that it's still affecting me somehow, and just challenging myself to think about it and go, well, hold on, why do I think that? Or how have I come to that conclusion? What do I actually think about this? What do I believe? And by questioning yourself, you can be a bit more sure of yourself and come to terms with who you actually are and, you know, what you believe and what you think. So that's where we're at now. I'm a year and a half or so into therapy specifically on the topic, and I feel good. I'm not filled with anger or resentment or anything towards Scientology. All I want to do is share my story and give others a platform to do the same, because listening to other people's stories helps you so much in your recovery process to realize that you're not alone and other people have gone through it. And even though this other person's story might be completely different, they were a Mormon or a member of the Moonies or whatever, the techniques are the same, their experiences are the same, and that helps you realize what Scientology really is. And after you've had that realization, you can start working on it and get help. So that it's kind of fueled me to start doing this thing and find a new purpose of helping people, but actually in a way that's good rather than a way that's manipulative.
Yes, that's so beautiful. And thank you so much for sharing all of that. There's something that I want to underline that you so beautifully put, where the first step to healing is awareness. So once you can recognize, oh, I'm pushing this feeling down, that's just, it's like 50% of the way, right? When you can actually catch yourself in the moment doing something that is a programmed belief, something that did not come from yourself, your own intuition, whatever it is, you want to call it God, I don't know. When you realize that it's implanted in you and you don't actually think that way or you don't actually want to behave that way, that's when you can make a change. So even just watching episodes like this where you have someone telling their story and you can relate to that and go, oh, I didn't realize that I also do that. That's such a great first step in recognizing the things that don't belong to you. So thank you so much for sharing your story. That was incredible. I think we could talk for like another 5 hours. But
100%.
So we'll have to bring you back again for another episode. But before we go, I wanted to get your Linda Listen moment, your sassy statement, as the viral video with the toddler goes, to an organization or whatever you want to say. Some people take it an inspirational route, something that they want to impart on our listeners.
Sure. So I think mine's probably going more towards a Scientologist or someone who's in Scientology. And I would say, Linda, listen, even if you think you're doing the right thing and realize you have doubt or you have concerns or questions, that's okay. It's okay to question what you believe and what you think, and it's okay to believe in some parts of Scientology and apply them and not believe in others. In Scientology, you have to believe in it. It's either you believe in it and work it and do it, or you don't. It's a binary choice. So I would say, it's Linda, listen, it's okay to be in the gray area and have indecision and believe and agree with some bits and not other bits. It's okay to have your own thoughts and your own determinism, and what you read and how people are in Scientology isn't 100% true all the time.
Yes, I love it. I'm with you. Critical thinking, use your intuition, do what feels right, and get rid of what does not feel right. So where can everybody find you and follow you and support you, Alex?
Thank you. Yeah, so my name is Apostate Alex on YouTube. I'm on Twitter and Instagram as well, but YouTube's the best place to reach me. I do a mixture of sort of 10-15 minute videos breaking down different principles and things and stories that have happened to me in my Scientology journey, and also longer form, hour-long interviews with former members and so on. So if you want to find out more about Scientology and how it affects people and so on, and hear people's stories, it's a great balance of quick, short stuff to watch and more in-depth conversations. So yeah, come check us out and hopefully see you guys on a live stream soon.
Beautiful. Any final thoughts before we go?
Not other than congratulating again you on your 10,000 subscribers. And also, I wanted to say thank you for what you're doing as well. I think this isn't said enough to people like yourself who have a platform where you're helping people come out of coercive control groups. And you may not be aware of the help you are actually providing people, because someone might be watching all of your videos and relating to them, and that's really significant in helping them get out of a cult or change their mindset and start that recovery process, but they're not quite there yet to be able to message you and talk about their story publicly or thank you, because they're just at the start of that journey. So I guess my final departing comment would just be, you're helping more people than you realize, and you may not even be aware that people are watching your content and being helped by it. So thank you for what you're doing, and definitely keep it up.
Thank you so much. That's very sweet of you. And I do really appreciate that. And I do hope that this content is able to reach a lot of people and help in any way that it can. That's why we're here. That's why we're both doing it. So same to you. Thank you for all of your content and helping people who are leaving Scientology or who are in Scientology and have questions. It's really important. It's important what we do. So if you want to further... not you specifically, Alex, the listeners, if you want to support the podcast, I do have a Patreon, patreon.com/cultsdoconsciousness. That would be amazing if you could support there. Thank you so much to Jonathan, my newest supporter. I appreciate you. And until next time, follow your highest excitement, be conscious, and be well.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you hear, it would mean a lot if you could like and subscribe on YouTube and leave a review or a comment to help with our visibility. You can also find me on social media at cults2consciousness or reach out by email at cults2consciousness@gmail.com.